All we need is a little understanding. Walk a mile in their shoes. And if we keep our hearts open-minded, we'll enjoy this wild ride called life. And if we keep our hearts open-minded, we'll enjoy this wild ride. This wild ride called life.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for being on another episode of the Truths We Hide podcast. I am very honored to introduce to you author CEO Vault. She sent me a copy of her book, and it's so good. And I love her background story. I'm not going to get too much into it, but she is currently an elementary school teacher, but she worked as a worked for the Department of Social Services, Child Services, on the sex abuse team. So right there, it should tell you something. And her first book here that I have with me, but she'll talk about her second one, is called For the Children with Love, Sadie's Story. And I, because of my hectic weekend, I was still able to get in three chapters. And the first three chapters drew me in. And it was, partly because of my own history as a child, but also because of the way she brings the readers in. Incredible writer, incredible author. I'm so glad that we met just by chance through a Facebook post.
Yes.
But yes. I truly believe that God just knows. Whoever you believe in, he just knows. So thank you so much, Debbie, for being here. Tell us
about— Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like I said, it was that Facebook post, just it was there at the right time. So
yes.
Tell us about this passion, this mission of yours, because it's I'm sure it's not easy.
No, I was a assessment caseworker on the sex abuse team for the Department of Child Services. And I did that for about a year and a half. And I loved my job because I felt like I was that person that was helping. I was that first knock on the door. I was going to be saving the kids. And there was a lot of times that it went really well. And then there were other times that it was frustrating and heartbreaking. And you would get angry, you would cry and all of that. So anyways, I had always said I wanted to write a book. And I never had an idea from beginning to end. I would have bits and pieces. And so my best ideas are born in the bathtub. I tell everybody that. So I'm taking my nice long hot bath. I had left DCS and I was a teacher, still am. And I was thinking about a situation with one of my students at the school that I knew about. And then it brought me to thinking about something my son had told me, which wasn't very nice, but he had came to me and he was searching for his career. And he said, "Mom, I got the perfect job." And I'm like, "What?" And he goes, "Give me a list of pedophiles. I'll go to their doors. I'll say, 'You touch that kid, I shoot him.' And we're done." I'm like, "Well, honey, you can't do that. That's not legal." But, you know, great idea. So I'm thinking about him saying that. And then I'm thinking about some things that had happened at the Department of Child Services. And the book came to me and it was like, I am going to write a book about a social worker who is sick and tired of people hurting children. And she's just going to decide to take matters into her own hands. And that's how the book was born, was that was in my head. I knew the beginning. I knew the prologue. I knew the end. I knew all of it before I got out of the bath. And then I told people about it and they would be like, "Oh, good. Yeah, I'm sure, Debbie." You know, nobody really believed, I don't think, that I was going to write a book other than my best friend. And so then my son, my second son, was diagnosed with cancer. And I needed something to take my mind off of the cancer. I will say he is healthy. He is cancer free. God is good. They just had their first baby. So all of that is wonderful. But during that time, I had to choose whether I was going to worry and not pray or pray and not worry. So I decided I was going to pray and not worry, and I threw myself into Sadie's story. And so I decided I would throw myself into the book, and anytime I would have thoughts, negative thoughts, I would write. And that's what I did, and that's what saved me during that horrible time. Now he is cancer-free. I don't know if you were able to hear that, but he is cancer-free, and they just had their first baby. He's 3 months old. So all is good. God is good. But I sent the book to my best friend, and I'm like, what do you think? And she's like, I've been wondering when you're going to do this. And then people became very involved. So originally writing the book was for me. It was all about me, and I wanted to be an author, and I wanted to write this book. But then people started reading it. And what I found was it, number one, it made people who had been victims feel like they got some justice. And it made people start talking. And people started coming to me and telling me their stories. And they started telling me about their abuse and sharing these things that they had held inside. I had somebody come to me about a month ago, and they're like, you know, look this up on the computer. And I looked it up, and it ended up being a case. And I started reading, and I said, did this person touch you? The person's in jail for molesting his daughters. And she said, yeah, 20 years ago, and I've never told anyone until just now. And that's the problem with sex abuse. There was a time where we didn't talk to our children about drugs. Drugs were never talked about. Drugs were never mentioned. And then we realized that if we're going to combat it, we have to talk about it. Sex abuse is no different. It's uncomfortable. People don't want to talk about it. They don't want to think about it. They don't want to have those feelings. And they don't want to talk to the kids. But if we're not talking to our kids, then we're doing a disservice, and we're never going to fight it. So in order to fight this, we need to talk. And that's become my mission. So it started out as this very selfish, I want to do this for me. And now it has just made me realize that there's just a bigger plan in these books. They are fiction. I will tell you, they are fiction. They're based off some of the things that go through my head that I remember and different things. So, but there is no Sadie in particular, or no Nevaeh or Danielle or Aiden. There are thousands and thousands of people who can relate to their story. I would like to point out that although Sadie's story does start out like get go, boom, you will not read graphic details. I have so many people are like, I can't read that. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can. We have to be able to talk about it. And I write in a way that every character's voice is heard. So it starts out with Sadie talking. It goes to, you know, you'll hear from Sadie's mom and her stepdad and the social worker and the forensic interviewer and the husband. And you'll hear from all the different people from their point of view so that you can truly feel like you're hearing thoughts and feelings. So, but you will not hear graphic details at all.
Yeah, no, and I really appreciated that in here. So as I was reading, there are no graphic details. You get the gist of it. You understand what is going on. And I love how it's from everybody's perspective, because sometimes we don't know what's going on through each person, you know, that's involved. Right. And it was just such a, it's just really good, you guys. Like, you're going to get drawn in. You're going to get sucked in to reading it. And you're going to want to know what's going to happen. And you're going to want to be like, oh my gosh, you know, if I was there, I would do this. And so it's incredible.
You know, it's funny because my mom, she never liked reading when I was growing up, but now she loves to read. But she reads romance stories, and that's it. And so I had finished Sadie's story a year ago, and mom called me. She lives in Florida. I live in Indiana. And she said, you know, why didn't you have me read your book when I was there? Oh. And I said, because you wouldn't like it. And I said, you know, it's not your kind to read. Mom, this is not a love story. And she said, well, I think you should let me read it. I said, fine. Well, my mom is now my editor. She also reads along with me. And I get text messages at all hours of the night. And, you know, when I was writing Nevaeh's story, I call my mom every day at 3:30. I have for a long time. Her and her friend Beverly Cooper, they have a list waiting for me. And, you know, and I was writing Nevaeh's story, and I mentioned just, you know, because when I write, I shut my eyes and I just start typing, and whatever's in my head and those feelings. And I mean, I cry, and when I'm writing from the perpetrator's point of view, I take what I've watched in interviews with those people and in talking with them, and I have to become them to write their story. And I become this really hateful person that I can't stand. That would hurt a child, because I would never hurt a child. But it's funny, because when I was writing Nevaeh's story, I just kind of threw in the name Your Honor. And I was never going to say another word about that. I mean, that was nothing in the story. And I call, and Mom and Beverly put me on the speakerphone, and they're like, okay, we need to know about Your Honor. Don't say a word. We know it's in there. We know you got a surprise for us, but here's what we think. And I mean, it was hysterical. And that's why he became a bigger part of the book, is because of them. They literally, I get text in the middle of the night. You cannot let Nevaeh go back to that house. You can't. You need to stop it. And it's like, I got this, you know. But it's so much fun. And now I'm writing Aiden's story, which is the fourth book. And it is more of a love story. Aiden's story is more about what a foster parent can do to impact a child's life, and how being a child that has love in their life will change everything for them. And so they are so into Aiden's story now. So, I mean, it has been such a fun adventure to share with my mom. I'm like, you thought you retired and now you're an editor and you're helping write books. And she's like, loving it. So it's all good. Yeah.
I love that. That's
yeah.
That's really adorable. So tell me how you had your daughter start designing the books, the covers.
Yes, my daughter Peyton Kale is a tattoo artist, and I wanted her to draw my book covers. So in Sadie's story, at the front of my property, we have this old dilapidated barn, which is a very important part of the story for the social worker Delaney. She finds peace in this barn. She finds it as a place where she can go and be understood. So I took a picture of the old barn, and my husband took a picture of his friend's backhoe. And I, of course, I knew what the story was going to be. And I said, I need you to design a cover with this barn and a backhoe in it. And she said, okay. And she did. So then I called her when I was doing Nevaeh's. I'm like, all right, here's what you need to put on this one. So she, without her expecting it, she has become my cover designer. And she's like, Mom, I'll get to it. I've got tattoos to do. And I'm like, okay, next you need to design my tattoo that you're going to give me of all these book covers. So yeah, I'm trying to keep her busy. So I'm very, very proud of her. She's always wanted to be a tattoo artist. And so now she's living her dream, and that's what she needs to do. So
that takes skill. I couldn't imagine. I mean, I have tattoos, but I could never, don't even know.
she's incredible. And I mean, I told her with Nevaeh's story, I said, we just need a nasty old house. Nothing is nice. Put a box in it somewhere. And this is what I got. So
I love that.
Yeah, this is Nevaeh's cover. So and then CJ Ives Lopez is a good friend of mine, CJ, and she has been incredible. So she helps me put everything into KDP and format and stuff like that. So I just have an army of people that support me, and it's been an incredible journey. So I'm trying to get Jason Bateman to put this into a Netflix series.
Right.
Can't you see it, too?
It needs to happen. It needs to happen.
But, I mean, in all seriousness, though, we really do. We need to talk about sex abuse to our kids like we do drugs. Because what happens is mom or dad or aunt or uncle, whoever, says, don't let anybody touch your private parts. And then somebody does that to the child. The child does not have control. And then they say, I bet you were told not to let me touch you, but you did. and now it's your fault. And if you tell, they're going to be mad at you. And now they've just gotten away with it and they can continue to get away with it. But if we talk about it like we do drugs or any other big issue in our household and get past the embarrassment of talking about it, we can make a difference to these kids. I have kids that have came to me before, and when they realize that there's just no shock value, I'm not gonna think anything of what they tell me. They come to me all the time. I get notes about what happened. And of course, all of this stuff has been reported, but they need somebody that's not gonna go, oh my gosh, I can't hear that. You know, they need somebody that's just gonna look at it head on and say, okay, let's talk. And that's what we need to do. We need to talk.
You are so my mission. You are absolutely right, because I'm just gonna tell you, as a person who was molested at 10, our parents taught us that, you know, don't let anybody touch you. But you know what? It happened to me twice before I said something, because he got into my head, mm-hmm. making me think that I allowed him to do that. Yeah. So the second time it happened is when I was like, I can't. Like, I was just so filled with emotions that I had to tell my parents, and then it was reported and so on. But he only went away for 9 months, you know, because we don't talk about it enough. We don't put the emphasis on it enough. And it's just it's a scary world out there. And these poor kids, they just feel like it's their fault. So,
and with it, with all the online stuff, that only makes it worse. And, you know, one thing that I think is so hard for children to understand is they blame themselves, and for many reasons. But when you think about rape victims, you know, adult women, men, they blame themselves. There's this blame that comes with it. But with a child, they don't have the ability to understand. Mm-hmm. And we used to have what they called good touch, bad touch at mm-hmm. school. You know, the program, and they changed the name, and they changed it. It's now called the Body Safety Program. And that's a good thing. But the reason they changed the name is because sometimes bad touches feel good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I did a podcast with a lady from, I think it was Australia. And she was talking, I watched a podcast that she had done with somebody else. And that person had talked and said she felt so guilty because she would ask for it. You know, she'd say, hey, daddy, are you going to do this today? Or daddy, are you going to do that? Because it felt good. And as a little child, you don't know that it's wrong. All you know is that it feels good. Well, then when you realize that, no, that's not supposed to be happening, then there's all that guilt. And you feel like, you know, it's my fault. It's my fault because I went back over there. It's my fault because I didn't make him stop when I knew it was wrong. But they don't have that control. And they don't have the ability to separate themselves from that. So until parents start talking, and families and people, and realizing that it's normally not a stranger, it is almost always somebody you know. Yep. And so when your kid says, I don't want to sit next to so-and-so at dinner, you need to be investigating why, and not just, oh, they're fine, just sit next to them. You know,
I mean,
we have to start talking.
No, you're right. You are so right, because I don't want to say it wasn't a big deal before. It just wasn't talked about before. We just didn't know what to see, or we didn't want to believe it, especially if it was a family member. We just didn't want to even think about it. So it just goes, we don't talk, it goes unheard. It just doesn't get solved.
And parents, I mean, it's such a horrible type of abuse that I think parents, they bring this guilt on themselves that they failed. And you know, sadly, we can't do that. You can't, you know, every time something bad happens, you can't blame yourself. So especially if you're doing everything you can to protect your child. But people, normal people, don't understand how those people work. And so that's why these books are bringing out, you know, how the mind of the perpetrator and how they work and how they manipulate and how they get what they want. I mean, these are not normal people. That normal people don't hurt children.
Yeah.
Normal people do not do this kind of thing. So you can't think like a normal person and fight it. Right. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, you know, my whole goal now is to bring awareness. I want this to just blow up into a subject that we talk about openly and honestly. And, you know, when I worked at DCS, I remember saying things to my kids, and I think I've told them this their whole lives. And it's things like, you know, what if somebody takes you and kidnaps you and they tell you I'm not looking, they're lying. If they say I stopped looking, they're lying. I mean, we tell our kids those things, you know, mm-hmm. Nothing is ever going to make me stop trying to find you or stop trying to help you or try to protect you. You know, we tell them those things. But when it comes to sex, we tend to shut down and we don't want to talk about it. And we need to.
You're right. You're right. I mean, I have a 20-year-old now and an 18-year-old and boy and girl. And I've been talking to them about stuff until they're just like, I know, mom, I know. And I'm like, well, I just need to keep telling you because.
Yeah, absolutely. We do. Because those perpetrators, they're not going to be telling the truth.
No,
they're not. And they're going to manipulate and they're going to lie and they're going to convince these kids and young adults. That don't have the ability to know the difference. So hopefully it'll make a difference. I mean, I hope so.
It will. We just have to keep pushing the message. We have to keep pushing this out there. That's what it's going to take.
Yes.
How long did you work for DCS?
I worked there about a year and a half.
Okay. How was that?
You know, I honestly, that was my favorite job I've ever had. I absolutely loved that job. It was always busy, but it was a very sad job. We would get, because I was on the sex abuse team, we only had at most 24 hours to get to a child. And that's if it wasn't an immediate danger. So we would get anywhere from, you know, 2 to 5 assessments a day of sex abuse. And there were 7 of us on the team. So if that tells you anything.
Oh my God.
Some of them were 1 hours, and I talk about it in the book. You kind of see the process of how it really does work. Mm-hmm. You know, we get a 1 hour call, and that means that child might be going home to who they're saying is hurting them, and that we have to get to the child immediately. And we literally had an hour to get to the child, and you know, we've removed kids from school to bring them back to our office. They talk with the forensic interviewers who are specially trained in sex abuse. They know what questions to ask without leading. All the characters of my book, their personalities are based off of different people. Jill Carr is a forensic interviewer and Jillian is based off of her. So, you know, I base people off of personalities that I know. But the goal of DCS is never to remove a child from their parent. I think people think DCS wants to take your kids. No, we don't, because DCS doesn't have foster homes for your kids. Mm. And you're going to sit in the cubicle with that child you removed for however long it takes. And I've slept in my cubicle before with children on cots. So, you know, you don't want to take a child, but the job is to protect them. So you do what you have to do to protect them. If the parents are, if they believe the child, if they are going to take the measures to protect the child, then the child's going to stay with their parents and do that. But the child has to be removed from the dangerous situation and the person that is hurting them. But once we do the forensic interview and determine what's going on, we work directly with the detectives. The detectives are normally the ones that go and talk to the perpetrators. They bring them in. We watch the interview on you know, television or camera, whatever, and go from there. But as an assessment worker, we only have 48 hours before court once you remove a child. So once we're involved, we have 48 hours to get our job done and go to court. After we go to court, then the permanency worker takes over. And that is the person that checks on the child every month, makes sure the services for the child are provided, therapy, counseling, whatever, helps the family with what they need, and tries to do their best to help that child. So as an assessment worker, you're the first knock on the door. You don't have a lot of time. So it was very rush. Part of the reason I got out of it is my daughter was a junior in high school. And I was finding myself constantly saying, I'm not going to be home. I have an assessment. I'm sorry, you're going to need to find somebody else to take you to work. I'm sorry, I can't be there. And it hit me that, you know, I have a year and a half left with my child before she goes to college. And I can either spend it disappointing her or I can start teaching again. I was a teacher before and I knew I could go back to teaching and have that time with my child. So that's what I chose to do, was leave and go back to teaching. And now in teaching, you have this whole different realm, because when a child tells you something, you want to go and knock on that door and take care of it. And you can't do anything but call the counselor and say, you need to do this. So yeah, it's definitely different, but it really helped me grow as a person. And I think it makes me a better teacher even, because I relate with the kids on so many levels. So
that's amazing. And what grade do you teach?
Fourth. Yeah.
So
oh, they're awesome. I do. I love my kids. Obviously, my goal is to write full time. I have so many stories in my head and so limited time to write them down. But, you know, it'll happen someday, I hope. And but yeah, I love to teach and I love to write.
That's amazing. Yeah, I love how we met through CJ. She I just, you know, I haven't met her in person ever, but
me either. And isn't that funny? I honestly her cousin is somebody I went to high school with.
Oh my God.
I have not seen Beth, her cousin, in probably 30 years. And Beth read my book. And then, you know, she sends this message and says, look, I'm introducing you to my cousin, CJ. And CJ, you need to help her because I need her next book. And do it. And so CJ's like, okay, what can I help you with? So I'm not a technology person. So CJ helps me with all of that. She helps me with Facebook posts and things like that. And all the technology stuff I don't like to do, so that I can just write.
I love it. I love it. Yeah. She inspires me to keep writing. So
she's amazing.
This is, I think, how do I put this? What advice would you give to people who want to write but just feel like they have nothing to write? Even though we know, yes, you have a story and they're scared. What do you tell them?
Just do it.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, just start writing and it'll come to you. And, you know, we all suffer from that moment of, oh, I don't know what to write now or whatever. But for me, what helped me was I knew the beginning and the end. And so all I had to do is fill in the middle. And that has been with every story that I have. I knew how Nevaeh's story was going to end. I knew how Danielle's story would end. And I know how Aiden's is going to end. And I'll write the next story when I have it from beginning to end. So I think it helps when all you have to do is fill in that middle. So if you have your beginning and you know how it's going to end, then just start writing, because you can go back and correct. You can go back and make some changes. And I've went back and rearranged chapters and all kinds of stuff. Because I mean, the only way you're going to fail is if you don't try. So just try and enjoy the journey. Yeah. And that's the fun part. You know, yes, it's stressful. Yes. You want it to be perfect. Don't ever try to edit your own work. I edit papers all day long. I'm a teacher. You know, I can edit anybody's work, but I cannot edit my own, because I'm going to read what it's supposed to say, not what I actually typed.
Yeah.
So always have people that'll help you, but your friends and your family, they will. So, and just be true to who you are. You'll notice in all of my books, two things. You'll never hear the F word. My books are not full of bad language. There are some bad words, but never that. Mm-hmm. And you'll never hear God's name in vain in any of my books. And that's just who I am as a person. Yeah. Well, my mom would never read it if it said that word. And I don't like God's name being used in vain. So I don't use that, and I don't allow it in my classroom, and I don't write it in my books. So, yeah. You know, just be true to who you are, and grow a little bit of a thick skin, because people say, you know, whatever they say. So far, my reviews have been good. The people have been really good to me. So hopefully that continues. But I know someday somebody will have something bad to say.
And I'm so glad you brought that up, because it's true. And it's with everything, social media, you know, putting yourself out there, books, whatever the case is, there's always going to be one person who just does not like it. You just have to say, you know what, this is mine, and this is my journey, and I'm going to keep going.
Right. And, you know, and do it for you. My dad wrote a book, and he's been saying for years, I'm going to publish it, but I have to type it first, and I need an old typewriter to type it on. I'm like, just do a laptop. He won't do the laptop. So I bought him an old computer, and he still had reasons why he couldn't. So I'm going to see them in a few weeks, and I said, have your manuscript ready. I'm typing it up and getting it in, and I'm going to put this online. And if you don't ever sell a book, who cares? But this is a goal, and we're going to make it happen for you.
Oh, that's
he's something. But yeah, I mean, just do it. You know, you have one life to live, and you just need to live it. And it's not always going to be easy. I mean, I had pictured, you know, I would get a book deal and an agent. And I truly believe that the main reason, not that I'm a great writer or anything like that, but I really think people see sex abuse and go, nope, not touching it, not touching it. And I don't know if I'll ever find an agent that'll touch this subject because we don't talk about it.
Yeah.
So I guess it's up to me to promote it, which is not a good thing. I love talking about the books, but trying to promote it has been the hardest part.
Yeah. Well, we're going to help you do that because the topic needs to be discussed. We need to put it out there. Jason Bateman's going to hear it. It's going to be a documentary. So we're going to put that out there in the world.
I will say I messaged him on Messenger. Now, it could be somebody under a bridge messaging me back, but they did message back, you know, much love. Thank you. So then I messaged him back more recently with this long post that said, I'm really not a crazy person. And I just need you to understand how important this is and that I need somebody to back. I'm not asking for money. I'm asking for you to just support me, be behind me. I've never heard back. So I'll keep trying. Hopefully someday. But yeah, I can see it being a Netflix series. It would be awesome.
Oh yeah. It's going to happen. It's just going to take time. That's all. No big deal.
Yeah.
okay. So that's what you foresee in the next 5 years. I'm just going to assume the Netflix series, more books and the conversation to happen. What else would you like to have happen?
I want to see a change. I want to see a change in how we handle this. I want to see a change in the court systems and how they punish this. People get more time for hurting animals, and trust me, I'm a big animal person. You don't want to hurt an animal either, but they get more time for hurting an animal than they do a child. The hardest part is when a child is interviewed, if they're scared to talk and they can't tell, which sometimes it takes years for kids to really disclose what happened to them, but they could be considered not a good witness. And then that person walks. Because the child is afraid to talk. And so we have to make it to where our kids aren't afraid to talk, that the perpetrators are the ones that are afraid. We need to make them afraid and not our children. And I think just talking about it, we've got to change something because right now those people are winning and they're hurting our kids. And that's not right. We have to change it.
You're right. No, absolutely. Have you ever considered being a speaker on this?
You know, I don't know how qualified I would be as a speaker. I mean, I would gladly talk to anyone about the experience I had. I had one podcast lady call me a therapist. I'm not a therapist. I wish I was. They make a lot more money than a teacher. But I thought about going back to school and getting like something in psychology as far as childhood stuff. You know, I'm willing to learn and I would love to learn more so that I have more facts. I don't think it would change how my books are written other than maybe give more information. But I would love, love, love to do something to help. And that's not what this started as. My journey was, I just want to write a book. I just want to publish a book. And that was all I wanted. And now it's not just about writing a book and publishing a book. I want to see a change and make a change. And I don't know how good of a person I am for that. You know, I don't know if that's what I'm supposed to be doing. I feel like that's what God's leading me to do, is to get people talking. So I'm just kind of going along, and whatever opportunities I have to spread the message and get people talking, I'm gonna take.
Yeah. I already have ideas in my head, so we'll talk about that offline. Okay. I'm like, oh, I know what she could do next.
Okay. I will listen to you too. I'm good at following directions.
No, I just think there is other opportunities out there to help get this message out there. And I'm just, I want to say I'm excited for you, not about this topic, but because I could see you do so much more. And I'm so excited that you wrote these books to bring it up. So I can't wait for you to be part of that change for these children. So it's going to be,
you know, it's funny because, you know, I say, I hope you like the book. Well, nobody's going to like the subject of child sexual abuse, but look at this book as you are following Delaney's journey. Yeah. Delaney is this nice little farm girl social worker, which is a lot of my personality. I'm not Delaney. I haven't had the past that Delaney has. You know, Delaney has a past involving a stepdad that you'll read about. My parents have been married for 54 years this year. So, you know, I don't have that kind of past. But definitely that passion. A lot of me is in Delaney. A lot of her husband, Dale, is my husband, Jim. Her best friend in there is just Sherry, and my best friend is Sherry. So, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things that are very much alike, but you're following her journey. You're following the journey of a woman who says, we're going to put a stop to people hurting kids. And if I've got to stop them myself, I'll stop them myself. And, yeah. You know, when I finished Danielle's story, and I started writing a different book that has nothing to do with this topic to promote it to literary agents in hope of getting an agent on a different topic. So then I could suck them into this one. And I started writing the book, and I wrote maybe 6,000 words in a week. And then I thought, you know what? I'm ready to do Aiden's story. So I put that back book aside. And I had 7,000 words in 2 days and 2 evenings.
Oh my God.
It's like, this is my passion. And as much as there are so many other stories I plan to write, until I can't, I need to keep writing the ones that are so important. And Aiden's story brings in the characters from the first three books. And so you have kind of you don't have to wonder so much about those characters because they're back. But when I called my mom in Beverly, and they're like, our old friends are back. And I'm like, yeah, she's like, I've missed them so much. And we do. I mean, we are so in love with these characters and watching them save the world.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. Even though it's a hard subject, you know, but it's a lot of fun.
No, that's really great. You were absolutely called to do this. So yes. Sending you all the positivity your way to keep going.
Yes, thank you.
Absolutely. So where can people find your books?
My website has links to my books. They're on Amazon, free with that KDP select or whatever. But my website is booksbycovault.com, COVALT. So booksbycovault.com is my website. And the links are on there. I write under CO Vault. As a way to honor my mother and father. My main name is Covault, so want to honor them.
That's beautiful. That is so beautiful. Well, I am so grateful to have met you and to have your first copy of your book. I'm going to finish this because it is, you guys need to get it. So go to her website. I'll have that. I'll have her link in the podcast guide. And all her other information, but stay tuned because big things are going to be happening for her. So
thank you for having me.
Of course. Okay. Thank you so much. And I look forward to seeing what else you do.
Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for listening to the Truths We Hide podcast, created and founded by your host, Annette, the founder of A Wild Ride Call Life. Also, a big thank you to all of our sponsors for each and every episode that is aired. We have so much support from them and all of our listeners. You can find more information at www.awildridecalllife.com.